Well, hi everybody. This is Shannon Rudisill. I am the executive director of the Early Childhood Funders Collaborative, sponsoring the Raising Child Care Fund. And I have to say, we are very happy to have you with us. And we've had tremendous interest in this. We've had over 20 states represented in the folks who responded to this to dial in today. So we're very excited to tell you about the Raising Child Care Fund, which we have been working on now for many, many months. And so we're very happy to share it with the world. So a little bit of background, what we're going to do in today's webinar. So today we're going to talk about the Raising Child Care Fund. You're going to hear from our project manager and also one of our participating funders, who I'll introduce in a minute. We're going to talk about the reason why the Early Childhood Funders Collaborative was interested in sponsoring this fund. We'll talk more about the request for proposals and some of the logistics behind it. And it's really an opportunity for you to hear more about it, to get some orientation, and also to answer your questions, which is why it was important that Rena go over at the beginning how you're going to ask questions. Because we have quite a large number of participants, which we're excited about, we're going to encourage everybody to use the Q&A feature that Rena showed you over on the left side of your screen for questions. And this is a competitive process. Even the number of folks who've joined us on the phone today indicates that we're very likely to get more proposals than we would be able to fulfill. So we're also very interested in being sure that we have a level playing field, and that's another reason we wanted to the degree possible, answer questions in a way that was open and allowed every interested person to be able to listen in. And if you have questions we can't answer today but we feel like would be helpful and we should answer, we can also continue to post frequently asked questions on our website, so you can be looking out for that. We're going to take questions at the end of today's presentation. So if you have a question, feel free to chat it at any time before you forget. Don't hesitate to go ahead and type it in, and we'll be monitoring that box. But then we're not going to take them until the end when you've had a chance to hear all the information. So today I'm going to be joined by Rashonda Perryman, Program Officer with Community Stewardship at Vanguard, who is one of our participating funders. And she's going to talk a little bit from the funder perspective of why she and her colleagues were interested in participating in this fund, and also with our completely invaluable project manager, Rachel Schumacher, who's really been bringing everybody together on behalf of ECFC to work through this project, and who's just been an incredible asset to us. But first, I'm going to tell you a little bit about ECFC and why we are interested. So ECFC, the Early Childhood Funders Collaborative, is an association, a collaboration of 41 member funders. One of the things that makes our association unique is that we have local, state, and national funders all participating together to learn and act around early childhood. And specifically, I would say, around early childhood systems building and also policy-aware approaches to early childhood changes. A fair number of our members focus significantly on early learning and early care and education, but we also have growing and exciting interest across a number of, we have leaders in early and infant mental health, in parenting, two-generation approaches, maternal health, and both mental and physical health. So we're really taking a whole child, whole family, whole community approach. This collaboration has been going on for really about 24 years and has recently in the past few years grown. Our two primary goals for working together are to increase the effectiveness of philanthropic investment and really, like I said, in improving systems and making, you know, policy-aware changes, both changing policies themselves through investing in advocacy and also through funding services that lead to reforms, expansions, improvement in early childhood services, at the local, state, and national levels. What I would say is that, you know, over the decades that ECFC has been together, the thing that we do all the time is we do a lot of learning together. We have work groups of funders that focus on particular issues, that share their experiences, what they're funding, the research that they're reading. And then periodically over that time, people have gotten together to fund things together, sometimes by pooling money and sometimes just through natural alignment that grows out of people talking so much about their shared interests, where the money, you know, is separate grants but toward a common purpose. Today we're going to talk about a pooled fund, which is actually, I think this is only the third one in the history of ECFC. But you'll hear through the matching grant structure that we're going to describe that we're actually trying to be very big tent with this, because our goal is to advance this work and to allow multiple ways for our funder colleagues to get together with us. And I think that this is a prime, this Raising Child Care Fund you're going to learn about today, for ECFC, it's a prime example of the way we work, because it really started with a subcommittee that got together and talked about for over a year, like, where are we with child care advocacy and with child care advances in policy? And we've had some really good wins, both, you know, in legislation and in funding over the past few years. But as Rashonda is going to talk about in a minute, a lot of us felt like not nearly as much as we would have expected to have given the public awareness around the issue and the amount of time we'd all been working at it. So the group talked for a long time about, okay, where do we want to shore up our resources? And this area of bringing more family and teacher and provider voice was really an area that emerged from the conversations around the subcommittee. And I'm going to let Rashonda talk more about that. But I think one thing that I want to note here is that we are partnering and we're aware of many other people who have also come to this conclusion, and we've been in good dialogue with the Alliance for Early Success, who may very well be on the line with us today, representatives from the Alliance for Early Success, with the growing and exciting ECE organizing network, and also with the group of funders in parent engagement, leadership, and organizing, which is a group that has some overlap with ECFC, not 100%, but they've been funding, among other things, United Parent Leaders Action Network. So we've been working in dialogue with all of those folks. We do not feel like we've cornered the market here, but what we want to do is we want to provide yet another platform to move some resources into this raising parent and teacher and provider voices. I think it's also important for me to note that this pooled fund you're going to hear about has five members in it currently. This is voluntary participation out of our 41 ECFC members, but it's not limited to ECFC members. So we are very open to talking to additional funders who might want to participate. And some funders can only fund in their own states, which is why you'll hear us talking a little bit about the matching structure that we've incorporated so that, you know, we're trying to accommodate a wide diversity of funders in participating with us on this. So I'm going to turn it over to Rashonda, who's going to say a little more about, you know, why we're embarking upon this and why we're excited about this work.
Yep. Thank you, Shannon. Please let me know, Rena or Shannon, if you can't hear me well on this. So hi, everyone. As Shannon said, I am Rashonda Perryman. I work for the financial services organization Vanguard. As a steering committee member of ECFC and one of the funding organizations within the pooled fund, I echo Shannon's welcome. Thanks so much for being on the call. Thank you for your interest in the work. We're excited about starting this and excited about where we are with this project. I'm just going to take a few minutes to tell you a little bit about why the Raising Child Care Fund was created and what the impetus behind the work was from a funder perspective. I'll let Rachel sort of dig into the weeds a little bit, but I'll give you a high-level overview of sort of what this impetus was. I'm sure I don't have to tell anyone listening what a crisis we are in around child care in the country. If you're like me, you probably saw the op-ed from the president of Bank Street that was in the Times, I think over the weekend or at the end of last week. And while much of that information for many of us on the call is likely not new, for me, it's always surprising to see how little has changed in terms of what we need around child care. It's like we keep saying the same thing decade after decade. And as a mother of two young children myself, and even after working in early learning my entire 20-year career, child care is still a shock. The dire absence of quality, the price, the hours, the lack of diversity, those were all things that came up for me in the last few years when I was looking for child care, and I know I'm not alone in that. And I knew what to look for. I knew how to look for it. I knew that I had the resources to pay for it. But at the end of the day, there was not enough supply, just like for me, just like all other, many other people across the country. We were in crisis around child care, and we're struggling as a country to figure out how to get more high-quality child care slots available for families. As you can see on the slide that's on the screen now, some of the latest data show that this struggle is real and that most voters favor supporting low and middle income families having access to quality child care, and that across income levels, voters understand and are saying that there is a lack of affordable high quality opportunities. So why was the Raising Child Care Fund created? It was created because we knew that federal funding is woefully inadequate in meeting the ever-increasing need of millions of low-income families who are seeking child care assistance. There's clear evidence of this. We know that the Child Care Development Block Grant doesn't go far enough, and that not nearly as many children and families who are eligible for services are actually receiving it. In fact, as you see on this slide, only one in five children that are eligible are actually receiving those subsidies. The need for affordable, high-quality child care, as I said, is in crisis. But unfortunately, public dollars and policymaker understanding of that hasn't really caught up to what this need looks like. And as a result, as Shannon just sort of went over this a little bit, as a result, a group of ECFC members began discussing how foundation dollars can be used toward a solution or one solution toward this, and realized that there's an opportunity to really engage new voice in the call for action around this. And while with a goal of building the capacity of local groups to recruit and educate those that feel most, that feel this crisis the most, especially parents, teachers, caregivers, this goal of the Raising Child Care Fund really is to strengthen and broaden the call for significant public investment of high-quality child care and to use funder foundation dollars to really begin to shore that up. In a moment, Rachel's going to give you specifics and really get into the weeds on this, but I thought I'd just take a moment to give you three key points that you'll see on slide 8. So first, during this first round from 2019 to 2021, the pooled funds will support work in 5 to 8 focus states. We'll overview that in a minute, but this was limited to 5 to 8 states, focus states that we'll talk about. The fund is being administered by ECFC's fiscal sponsor, which is TSNE Mission Works, and the grant committee, which is made up of the funding partners that you see at the bottom of this slide. Just as an aside, we're hopeful that this, over time, this list of funding partners will grow. But for now, the 5 funding partners that you see at the bottom are the grant committee plus a few other selected outside reviewers will be the ones reviewing applications and making recommendations to TSNE for awards. And those are just a few of the highlights. But now I'll turn it over to Rachel to really fill the details in some. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you so much, Rashonda and Shannon. It's been so amazing to work with you, and I am the lucky project manager, Rachel Schumacher. I get to now walk you through the details of the Raising Child Care Fund RFP, and hopefully you can all hear me well. You've heard the origin story, but now let's get into the details. We're very excited about your interest. So remember, you can put in the chat box any specific questions that you have, but let me get started with a big overview. So let's see here. What is the point of doing the Raising Child Care Fund? We have some goals here that are really central to and of importance to the funders who contributed to start the Raising Child Care Fund, and they really should serve as guideposts for both what you're thinking about when you're looking at applying and what we're hoping to see as a result from this investment. We spent a lot of time thinking about them. The first is about really lifting up the voices of those most affected by the childcare crisis that Rashonda so ably described. And, you know, when you're thinking about that, obviously parents come to mind, but we're also thinking about childcare teachers, home-based childcare providers, and other natural allies in states and communities for them not only to be able to be able to talk about their stories and the things that they've experienced during this crisis, but to really be participants in crafting solutions and be a part of the solution as part of the goal of this fund. Number two is around the importance of increasing coordination between groups that are working directly with those most affected and the traditional child and family advocacy groups. Who have been doing some of this work long and hard and around the country, in state houses and on the ground, but to really build more of a connection between those groups so that the folks that are, you know, representing and working with those most affected have access to the folks that are doing state data analysis, policy work, that type of thing. So to build that connection. Third, we really want to emphasize how critical, and yet we know this may be a long-term goal. As Rashonda said, we have funds currently from our launching of this project for the next, for a three-year period. And obviously, change like this can take a long time to happen. But we think it's important to keep in mind that the long-term goal that really makes change possible is expanding financial resources to secure increased access to quality childcare. So the focus here is really on reaching more of those children who are most affected by injustice and inequity in states and communities so that they have an they have increased access to high quality childcare. What organizations can apply? This is just basic, tends to be the basic kind of information that you know, but it takes a lot of numbers and letters to explain it. But so according to IRS rules and the code that the IRS puts out, there's 501c3 organizations. So those are organizations that are nonprofits and count as a 501c3, are eligible to apply when they put forth a vision that aligns with this vision I shared on the previous slide. And we're really encouraging and excited to see, hopeful to see applications that represent those groups that are led by those most affected by inequities, especially low-income people and people of color. And we're also very interested in seeking to foster coordination and working in coalition with allies at the intersection of childcare, paid family leave, and economic justice. Early childhood issues should not just be limited to groups that traditionally have thought of themselves as focused on early learning, because it really affects so many other factors in a child's and family's well-being. So we're really excited to see those types of partnerships happening. Next, I wanted to put forth some, there's a couple places where I'm going to say there's two choices. Here's the first one. There are two grant award levels available. Okay, so when we were thinking about this work, we spent a lot of time talking to groups that are working with folks around the country, working with those affected by challenges in social and economic justice issues. And we're trying to understand, you know, the range of groups out there and what kind of supports they might need. So we came up with two levels. There's the developing level, and that's meant to capture those who have a need to build staff, perhaps maybe to focus on childcare work. It could be a group that hasn't worked on childcare before, or a group that hasn't been able to hire a full-time staff person to conduct outreach. The idea here is to allow for leadership development and to build capacity. And this grant is up to $75,000 a year. And what will be necessary is to think about a two-year plan. And the reason it's we consider this a two-year grant award is partially because we heard how difficult it is to hire, not knowing whether you would have funding for 1 or 2 years or how long you'd be able to keep that person on. So that's why this is structured this way. The second category is called strategic expansion, and that applicant would need to show some capacity has already been built and there are real opportunities for the group to expand their work. So this is up to $150,000 for the first year with a possibility of renewal where we would want to touch base with the group after year and see what, you know, what types of challenges and opportunities came up in the year and what makes sense for this, for another year. So renewal is possible. And again, this is really an opportunity to plan for expanding reach, not so much a new group, but a group that is really thinking of, has some strategic ideas for how to expand their work. As I said before, and we'll say again, we have some internal revenue codes we have to refer to here, so no RCCF funding will be used for the purpose of lobbying as defined by the Internal Revenue Code, and we put some of the numbers there for you to, for your reference. Okay, again, there are now two choices. So for have in your head, okay, there's the developing, there's the strategic expansion. There are also two types of grants to apply for in terms of the timing and the focus states. So the grant committee has determined to focus an early opportunities grant that would be only for the states listed here. So you can see it's California, Georgia, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, New Mexico, Oregon, and Washington. So those of you on the call from those states, those are early opportunities grants eligible groups. We're very excited to have folks in those states at least find a way to talk to each other and coordinate with each other if they're thinking of applying from the same state, and we're going to facilitate that once we hear from people in the state that they're thinking of applying to the letter of intent. We will connect people up just so you know who else is interested from your state, and we encourage coordination. These folks may apply for either the developing or strategic expansion level that we described in the previous slides. It's really important for these folks as you're thinking about your application, although this doesn't have the same matching requirement that I will describe in the non-target states, non-focused states, which will be the next slide. Right now, I just want to emphasize that because this is a grant opportunity that currently is limited to the time period for which we've raised funding at the national level for the pooled fund, it's really critical that you consider what types of sustainability that you might be able to show in your plan and to really seek out other support and have a credible plan for sustainability, which will earn additional points in the review process. So the budget, even you'll see if you've looked at the RFP, the budget you submit is designed to show what other resources the project that you propose could draw on. So you can see at the end, the letter of intent will be due June 7th, and I'll talk about that more later, but this is, doesn't have to be written in stone. It's just for our planning purposes and to know if there are multiple folks interested in the same states, and then the application is due at the end of June. Now, the challenge matching grant is a little different, and it's been organized in this way because we're very excited about this idea behind this opportunity. We want, if we could, if we had the money, we would probably not have had target states, but we had to make some decisions about that. However, We came up with the idea of the Challenge Matching Grant, and to be fair, multiple people that we've talked to along the way actually probably deserve credit for helping us develop this idea, including some of our state and local foundation partners who we talked to as we were developing this, who pointed out things like, well, if we're funding something like this, the money has to stay in our own state. It has to stay in our own community. We're community focused, we're state focused. That's not something that would be an opportunity for us. If you design it in that way, then we can't participate. And yet there is a lot of interest. So for those of you outside those eight states, this is the Challenge Matching Grant opportunity. It's designed to, one, give an opportunity to leverage the pooled dollars that we have been able to raise thus far and expand the reach and the idea and be able to work in other communities. And the second reason is because the national foundations who are launching this fund, Raising Child Care Fund, really strongly believe this work will be more effective in partnership with funders who are engaged in the work already in their geographic areas and have the expertise about what's going on the ground. So this is a great chance for us to be working with other funders and learn from them who are engaged more on the ground with what's happening in the states. So because this requires a partnership in multiple ways, the Challenge Matching Grant has a longer time period for the applications to come in. They require, as you can see, you can apply for a developing or a strategic expansion level funding level. However, there would be a one-to-one match needed from another funder so that the RCCF would provide half the total amount, getting up to the 75 or the 150. The letter of intent is also due June 7th because we just want to start to understand who is out there. And who's interested. We can even help link funders who might be on the call if they're interested. We could look into what groups might be available in their state. If there's a group in the state that is having trouble figuring out what kind of funders might be interested, we're going to try to help with those things. So please contact our Raising Child Care Fund at ecffunders.org email and let us know if there's something that you have questions about related to those things. And the applications are not due until the end of the summer. We had several funder partners say, it's going to take us a while to really figure this out, or maybe there's a collaboration going on in the state already among funders. So we wanted to allow more time for that type of activity. Okay, so sections of the RFP. Now, this looks worse than we hope it is to actually do. There are 13 parts, but some of them are pretty basic, and we're going to walk through the part that might be most confusing to answer in a moment. So basically what we're going to want to do is you're going to want to develop a Word document. It should be hopefully no more than 15 pages for the narrative, not including the financials and letters of support, which can be lengthy, and those don't have to be included in the 15. But basically, we're going to need basic information. We're going to need to know which type of category of the two and two you're applying for. Are you applying for early opportunities? Are you applying for matching? Are you applying for the developing, or are you applying for the strategic expansion levels? We want to know about the organization. We want to know about the organization's experience working in civic engagement and coalition building. There's some questions around what the organization's take is on the state or local context for childcare and civic engagement opportunities. So that is a section that folks will need to fill in. There's a project narrative, which is pretty clear. You're going to put the purpose of the project and the strategies. This is where you need to refer back. We're hoping that those who are applying have project goals and ideas of what they want to achieve that are related to the three goals that I went over in the beginning. So those will be restated. If you're looking at your RFP, you can see that they're restated in there, and they're restated in the action steps and measures of progress matrix, which I'll go over in a second. We also are interested in what kind of needs your group might have for technical assistance, things that could be helpful related to anything from related to the three goals. So we would love to have some ideas for effective means of developing parent leadership, or we already have great ways, but we're interested in maybe finding a way to measure if we think they're as effective as possible. There's tools that and ideas that we might need, or we want media training, or we need some help thinking about what exactly would be the most effective thing to really work at in our state. So all these types of things might be things that you're thinking about. We also in that section are very interested to know if you're already receiving or have a good partnership with other groups that are helping with that. Self-explanatory is the project budget and narrative reminder. This is where we're really looking for the ideas you have about where else you can find financial support for the project. And obviously we also need financial status information and letters of support, including letters from potential funders who you're, if you're working with them in negotiation or just want to show that the conversations have started, anything like that that the potential partner funder could provide would be really helpful for us to know about. And if you're applying for the matching, then it should hopefully be more concrete what exactly that funder is planning to provide. Okay, there's so many questions coming in, but I'm trying to just get the material, and then we'll be able to stop and go back to your questions. Okay, so one thing that I want to spend a little time on is just to walk you through this matrix idea that we have. So please give very careful thought to this section. The idea here, as you'll see, is that each, there's three of them, each related to one of the three RCCF goals. And what the intention here is just to have a clear way of understanding the logic you have about what you want to do, the kinds of things that you think it's going to take to get there, and how you're going to be able to measure the progress toward those things. Again, we're not expecting you to say, we are going to solve all the problems of childcare in our state in the next 2 years, and here's how. We understand that there's going to be time needed. We really just don't want to know where you think things are and what you think needs to happen first, second, and third, and why. So what you should do and what you can think about here, please don't feel like you have to put in the project goal exactly what we put in the RCCF goal. What we're looking for is for you to have an opportunity to say in your own words what it is that you're really hoping to do, and hopefully that it would be aligned with the RCCF goal. So that would be what you would put there, and then you think about your achievement, the things you need to do, and how you would measure progress. The progress measures should be meaningful and realistic. And we provided some an appendix with some ideas just because we spent a lot of time thinking about, well, how would we even measure progress? And the grant committee was really clear they wanted the groups to be able to set their own measures and to really have that opportunity to create their own frameworks rather than to impose that. So all we've put in here are the three overarching goals that the funders have. We would like you to address all three of them, not meaning that they each have to have the same level of emphasis. And we don't expect you to, you know, solve all the problems of the world in the time you have under all three. We understand that, you know, you are going to decide from your own vision and your state or community what needs to happen first, what, you know, what groundwork needs to be laid before other things could happen. We're just interested in seeing that you've thought about all three of the goals and you see how they're interconnected. In particular, we really care, the grant committee really cares, that the work of leadership development and engaging the voices of those most affected is a foundational part of the work. Next, I'm going to share with you, again, some important dates that you can just keep, mark your calendars and keep in mind. We, as I said, the letters of intent are supposed to come in by June 7th. Again, just to say that they don't, there's more information in the RFP about what needs to be in the letter of intent. It doesn't have to be extensive, and it doesn't have to be written in stone. This is something that we're just hoping to get a sense of the extent to which there's interest and where it's coming from, who might be partnering, and whether there are multiple groups looking in certain states. Then we want to make sure that you guys get to connect up to each other. If you have specific questions, you're going to have an opportunity to answer them in two ways. Obviously, the chat now. You can always email our Raising Child Care Fund email address. And if you send in the letter of intent, you will be invited to office hours. And so that's why we really require that letter of intent to come in to know who to invite to that more intimate conversation that we hope to have after this. So reminder, as you've probably gotten very clearly, that only the listed states that we have, the 8 states, are eligible for the early opportunities. And those applications need to be in by June 28th. And then the challenge matching grant applications will be due by August 30th. So, yes, please do reach out to our email to ask questions. And we will also be, as Shannon said, we want to make sure there's a level playing field. So as we get questions that come in that aren't just, you know, specific to a particular group, we will put generic answers to frequently asked questions out on the website. And to email them to the people who have the letters of intent, and we have a list of people so that people know the answers to these questions in case someone else asks a question you didn't even think of yet. They help do the work by asking a question that we get to answer for them, and it ends up helping you in your process. So we want to make sure everyone has equal access to those things. I am wondering if people have questions. I know Shannon has been monitoring the inbox. If there's anything that we should address right now, or whether people want to start adding in more questions that they have, so that we can see if there's any we can answer right now.
Okay. Hi, this is Shannon. So we have many, many questions, Rachel, that I have been monitoring and trying to think about which ones that we could answer quickly. I think, so let me just start and jump in. And I was going to say, we got one question that I think you addressed, but I'm going to, while I answer some of these other ones, I'm going to give you a heads up so you can be thinking about it. We have a question about the three goals and to what degree and how we expect people to address all of them. So if you'll think about, I think you talked about a little bit, talked about a little bit in the RFP, but I had that question myself several times during as we were doing the iteration. So you think about that one, and I'll answer a couple of these other ones. So we have a question. We have a couple questions that come to the issue of defining childcare. And this is where I would say, as a former federal official, we are lucky that we have some flexibility here. This isn't a federal grant where we have teams of lawyers reading a piece of legislation. So one of these questions is, are you looking at childcare provider teachers for children 0 to 5? So I would say that we are the Early Childhood Funders Collaborative, but in this particular case, I would hope that everything we would get would include anything that was that focused on parents or teachers or home-based providers would include and would be have a significant number of parents or childcare providers or teachers for kids 0 to 5. But in the childcare landscape, we know that it doesn't divide up so easily like that. People have multiple children. We have a summer care crisis. We have before and after school crises. So, you know, if you come in a portion of, and even a significant portion of the people that you're bringing together are, for example, school-age summer kind of teachers, you know, we have not said that would be disallowed in any case. But we hope there's, you know, a significant portion is folks who are serving or parenting children 0 to 5. Rachel, Rashonda, Netsy, anything else you would say about that?
No, I think that makes sense. And just to tag on, we were very intentional to say teachers and home-based care providers because we understand that so many children are in that type of care. So we are not limiting, just as we are not limiting, you know, to it only can be these years, you know, hard and fast to those years. We also would want to encourage thinking broadly about who the kind of folks affected are, not just those in centers, but obviously also those doing home-based care.
Yeah, and I would add to that, we got a similar kind of definitional question about grandparents caring for grandchildren, people working in therapeutic preschool. You know, in my mind, that's all under the umbrella of things in the child care, early care, and education realm that, you know, grandparents have those needs, too, when they're raising grandchildren. And so I think, you know, we don't intend to get into parsing all of these tiny things about child care. We think that you probably get the drift of the purpose of this. And Yeah, so I think that, you know, we would look at it broadly in terms of what teachers and home-based care providers and parents and families and grandparents need. Okay, Rachel, did you want to address the question about the three goals?
Sure. Yes, someone asked, do we have to address all three goals? Can we just focus on one and two? The answer is, yes and yes. You do need to address all three because we are interested in seeing that you're thinking about how they all connect. However, you are also quite able to say, look, we really feel like in the first couple of years we might be focusing more on this. We'll be doing foundational work on number three later. The thing about number three is, of course, it's sort of around like what is it that folks are going to be organizing around? So we would expect you'd probably want to think about that too. Even if your thinking is we need time to figure out what that is, and so we don't know exactly yet, but we're going to, you know, that's fine. But we do want to see you think about the three areas, but it's, again, also fine for you to say in our time scheme of what we think needs to happen, we're going to, you know, focus more activities and actions here and lay the groundwork more perhaps on number three. Does that make sense, Shannon? Would you agree with that answer?
Yes, I think that's right. And, as I was sitting here reading these questions, I went back and looked at the RFP and the language that was in the final draft, and I hope that came through in there, that we want you to address it in some way, but people have different strengths and they have different areas that they think that this money would help them build their capacity right now. And you know your strengths and your areas that you need to build up or that are part of your strategic plan for building up. And so, you know your work the best and you know your community the best.
Sure. There's another question here about can the grant level we apply for be lower than the 75 or 150? And the answer to that is yes, you can apply for up to those amounts in those two categories.
So, Rachel, I'm going to answer a question we got about sustainability. And while I do that, I think it would be helpful for you to talk about, so be thinking about this a little bit, because we had many conversations about how things would flow to organize, like if there's more than one organization in a state, et cetera. So if you'll think about that one a minute, I'll address this question that we got about, so the specific question I think was regarding in both categories of grants, folks would have a concern about sustainability and keeping staff on, not just for the, you know, developing category. And the person who wrote in said she'd like to hire community organizers, but it would be unfortunate to have to let them go after 1 year, which we agree. So that's why you see a big focus on sustainability and even on developing local funds. And we talked about this extensively extensively in our grant committee. And Rashonda, when I get to the end of this, I'm going to offer you an opportunity to add if you'd like. I think that this is, there are beautiful things about this pooled fund in terms of bringing new funders to this kind of work, learning together, and sparking some new thoughts. I think one of the potential drawbacks of this structure with a pooled fund is it's not one funder with a 10-year strategic plan to advance this that we, you know, or a super long-term commitment within one community. This is really more of a sparking kind of activity. And so we've had a lot of conversations among the participating funders about the importance of folks developing sustainability in their own communities and recognizing this for what it is, which is more of a spark activity over a couple. Or if we can raise more money, we would add some time. But I don't think we're adding time that would sustain an organization over the lifespan of the organization. And so that's why we really are excited about the matching, about being able to bring local funders into it. But we want to also be realistic. So that is one of the limitations of the structure. Rashonda, do you want to, as our representative funder here and somebody who's worked in a long time, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think that's right. I mean, I think the goal of this is to be catalytic, right? If there are ways in which that these dollars can be used at the local level to draw attention to the needs, to pilot efforts, to help other funders in your communities understand how these dollars can continue in ways that have been successful, I think that's what our goal is. I think you're absolutely right. We want to be realistic. They won't go on forever, but the idea is to spark some innovation around how dollars can be used from a foundation perspective.
Thanks, Rachel. So do you want to take I think we had you queued up to answer, to think about a question.
Sure. So we've got a few questions about how this state, multiple folks applying within a state, how that would work. And, you know, to some extent, we're interested to see what folks in states and communities determine would be the strongest proposal that they can put in that they think they really need and the case that they make for it. But the idea behind us trying to connect up people who are on the call or interested, in fact, someone said, can you just tell me right now who else is on from New Mexico? Maybe Rena can do that. I'm not sure. she's helping us in behind the scenes. Is that, you know, it's part of the goal. The second goal is to be more coordinated in efforts. We know that not everyone in a state is going to necessarily need to, nor is it the most effective thing necessarily for everybody to be working lockstep together. So we're not saying that's expected. But coordination and knowing who else is there and having a sense of here are the other assets in our state and here's why we think this needs to come here, whereas that group is going to do that. That's kind of what we're wanting to see in terms of coordination. We also don't have an unlimited amount of funding. So we're to the extent that folks can do the work and they're talking to each other about what's the best way to try to attract resources into our state, we would appreciate folks at least having some of those conversations, you know, before we have to start trying to ask questions like that. We think you know probably a little bit better and can start to think about those things. So the group has not said we will absolutely only give one grant per state. However, there is a strong preference for coordination. So that said, there's going to be a lot that we learn from looking at the questions you continue to have. I can take back some of these types of things to the grant committee and, you know, make sure that my answer gels with theirs, but I'm pretty sure that we have in no way said, you know, there's only going to be one grant per state or one organization, but we really also don't have that much money. And we have 8 states we're interested in hearing from for the early opportunities grants, and we're trying to figure out, you know, the best, the competitive what's the competitive best grant. So there's a lot to think about. We really appreciate how seriously you're taking this and how much you think on your end and can talk about on your end why you made the decisions you did to apply the way you thought made most sense for your state and for the groups in your state.
So I think that leads naturally to another question, which is how did we pick the 8 states? So I can, I think I can handle that one. And then Rachel, maybe you can answer this one about, there's a couple questions here about, what types of activities would direct funded services be funded and how are we defining advocacy versus lobbying? So if you'll think about that, I'll talk about the 8 states for a minute. So, I would say that is more an art than a science, but before we got to this point, I mentioned that we had been working, especially Rachel, I would say, had been working for a very long time, over about a year, and part of what we were doing during that time is we were consulting a lot. So we consulted with a lot of key people who are doing organizing right now. We consulted with people who are funding more traditional advocacy right now. And, you know, one of the things that we're learning, and part of this was really a funder learning activity, is we have two goals and their intention or they need to be balanced, right? One is to help folks build capacity where there's not maybe a lot going on right now, but the other is to also have some early successes so that we can continue to build momentum and to get people excited and to, you know, hopefully continue and sustain this work. And so, you know, that's why we called it early opportunities, actually, is because those are states in which after all of our consultations with organizers and advocates right now, it seemed like there were good opportunities really emerging. And some of that might have been because there's a proposal already on the table that seems to have some good legs, or there's, you know, this bipartisan interest, you know, in the legislature perhaps, that there's, you know, already something happening that would give us a good opportunity to make a big, meaningful difference. At the same time, in early childhood overall, in social policy overall, we have a little bit of a people who already have capacity get success and then they are more competitive, have more future success. And we're mindful of that dynamic, and we want to break that dynamic where we can, which is why we also wanted to say, okay, we've picked some early opportunity states, but we also really want to get, we want to open up opportunities for people in other states through this matching and to hopefully be able to find some state and local funders who want to join with us to build capacity there as well. Okay.
Sure.
Rachel.
So there's some questions about, someone asked, can we subgrant to another partner? I don't see why that would be a problem. So I think that would be allowable. Others have asked, if we have local match, does it have to be a brand new funder to that organization? And I would not say it has to be a brand new funder to the organization. It's just that, you know, the hope is that we are meeting new funders in this process, so they might be new to us but already have committed to those local folks. And, in fact, that's part of the idea is that we might find partners in state and local foundations from whom we can learn because this is a very lean operation and we're not going to have, you know, it's obviously we're not setting up foundations in every single state that we're going to be working in. So we really welcome the opportunity to work with funders that have already committed to a group as long as the work is, you know, as long as it's aligned and the project that that you're asking for funding from the fund for, you know, aligns with this other funder and, you know, they're excited about it too and want to be signing on to all the things you put in that matrix. So as long as that is clear, then I think that is not a problem.
So we have a question about whether or not this grant would fund direct services. And direct services is a broad term, but I think that in general the answer is no, we really don't contemplate this as funding. It's not funding direct child care services. Now, there may be some leadership development type of activities or, you know, some kind of advocacy or leadership or other training for the parents and teachers. If that's what you mean by direct services, then, you know, I think that's part of what we envision could happen. But as far as direct care of children, that isn't the purpose of this particular grant. I hope that answers the question.
Sure. Now, on the other hand, if you are bringing parents together and they have childcare needs for the time that they're working together as leadership activities, then that, I think, would be allowed. So
yes, thank you. That is a great clarification.
Different definition. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really great clarification because I would say that, you know, in my time as a federal official, the thing that was the most valuable and happened the least often was people coming, parents and teachers coming directly to talk to us in D.C., and a lot of it had to do with this lack of resources for things like travel and time off your job and child care. And so to that degree, yes, I'm glad Rachel clarified that. That is part of why we think there's resources necessary to do this kind of work.
Okay,
Rachel, somebody asked. I know, but I do. So somebody asked, does connecting organizations mean you would have to split the money? So I would say no, because that would be a disincentive to connecting, and we want you to be connected and coordinated. So now if you come in on with a grant with one project with another group, I think the grant is generally per project or per initiative. But so in that case, perhaps, if you're coming in together. But if we don't want to create disincentives to people talking to each other and partnering up. I hope that helps.
Someone also asked, what if we already are a recipient of funding from one of your pooled funders? Does that mean we can't apply? It certainly isn't a categorical disqualification at all. So that should not keep you out of the applicant pool. I do think the hope was that if you are having matching funds that you would apply to this, that they are from a group that is geographically limited to giving to the pooled fund in general. So the reason we developed the matching fund was partially to accommodate those funders who were very interested in what we were trying to do but couldn't contribute to the pool. So I guess that's a clarification. I'm not sure anyone actually asked that, but I just wanted to clarify. So we have 1 minute left. I guess we have to wrap up and take some of these questions and convert them into frequently asked questions that we can post. Please do use, you can see, thank you so much for your interest. You can see the email, the Raising Child Care email at the ecfunders.org. Please use that to ask questions. And if you don't hear an answer to see an answer to one of the questions you asked that we didn't get to today, please do not hesitate to contact that number and that email and ask, hey, did you guys have an answer to this? And check for updates at the website. Shannon Rashonda, thank you so much. Do you have anything else you want to add?
Rashonda, do you have a closing word to the dad? She might have muted herself. So on behalf of the Early Child Funders Collaborative, I just want to say thank you so much for your interest and thank you so much for your work. And, you know, we hope this was helpful in answering some of your questions and do keep looking. We'll send out FAQs to folks who are on this call, but also we'll keep posting things on the website. And we really look forward to hearing from you guys about what you're planning to do. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.
Thank you, everybody.